All right, Tiff, I've got the pizza from Alfredo, and I'm really excited. We've got some with mushrooms.
Wait. Where's it from?
It's from Alfredo.
Wait. Is it Alfredo's Pizza Cafe or Pizza by Alfredo? Because this is really important.
I think all pizza is the same, but
No. All pizza is not the same. You are wrong, sir.
It says Pizza by Alfredo.
Okay. I think that's the good one.
Actually, that's the bad one.
Oh, no!
So Trivia you fail. Don't get any Shroot Bucks.
No! Pizza by Alfredo is the good one.
No, it's the bad one.
Alfredo's Pizza Cafe?
That's the good one. Hold on. Now you've got me. Oh, no. Now I have to go and look.
Which one's the hot circle of garbage, which is my favorite
quote ever.
I'm
pretty sure he reads... Oh, golly. I'm pretty sure he says pizza... Yes, he says Pizza by Alfredo, and then everyone goes, ugh. And if I could take a screenshot, I would, but Netflix is mean. Pizza by Alfredo is the bad one. This is season 4, episode 3. It's Launch Party, debuted on October 11th, 2007, and it's time to see Dunder Mifflin Infinity kick off.
Yes. We are going to be having the special webcast party that Ryan has arranged. This feels so web 2.0.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny how this is all going on with the satellite parties and everything. But before we get into all of that, I love this cold open. I like how... It seems like they're all paying attention. Michael is completely enthralled that he thinks he's being captivating yes. to the conference room, but he's not.
Him feeding off of their energy is so great because like it just happens to time up perfectly. And it's literally no one's paying attention to what he's saying, but it just so happens to work out.
Well, it's just like I can see this happening in a classroom or a school.
Yes.
It just makes me feel like they're all in high school together and they're goofing on the teacher.
There's this cube on the screen and it bounces around all day. And sometimes it looks like it's heading right into the corner of the screen. And then at the last minute it hits a wall and bounces away. And we are all just dying to see it go right into the corner.
Have you ever seen any of those? Some of our listeners have shared them with us before, but sometimes people will take crowd reactions to like a home run or a hockey goal or something like that. And then they'll put in the clip of the DVD logo touching the corner of the screen. And then the reaction is just perfect afterward. Everybody is celebrating. And I kind of like just that there's a story to that because this ongoing camaraderie, it doesn't just happen all at once. Like it's sort of like the Office Olympics episode where Jim starts to realize that everybody has these different games. This is one of those situations mm-hmm. where over time, you know, like that's how it had to happen, that everybody gets in on it. And so this is the culmination of everybody, knowing, okay, you know, we're going to watch this. We're going to see it happen. And Michael, my favorite part of this, honestly, is when everybody gets up and walks out without him even telling them like the meeting's over.
Yes.
And he just like rolls with it. Oh, yes. Let's just quit while we're ahead. Everybody's like already past him. It's great.
That was so awesome.
That was awesome. Thank you.
I wrote this down about later on in the episode, but it applies here too. It's like we know these characters now, and the comedy of each of them can become more and more subtle. So it's just kind of like a remark or a look or a gesture. And it's like we've really cemented who everyone is at this point in the show. We talked about a long time, like getting to know them, especially some of the auxiliary characters. It took a little bit more development, a little bit more time to get to know them because we were getting so many small little snippets mm-hmm. of them throughout each episode. But now I feel like we actually know everyone. We have a sense of who everyone is and what they are and the role that they play within the office. I think a little bit later, Michael comes in with his shirt, right? And Oscar is in the room also. And obviously he makes a comment. He's like, this is why I'm here. It was just so under his breath. And it was like, because he was invited in because Michael wanted opinions about how he looked in this ridiculous shirt. And he invited all these women and Oscar, and Oscar just walks out because he realizes why he was asked into the conference room in the first place. And it's such a passing moment, but that's all Oscar needs to do at that point, because we know all of the history behind Oscar and we know how that led up to that comedy moment. We can infer it all in our heads. And that's why these seasons now coming up, and this season in particular, becomes even more delightful, because we are so used to them. And the comedy and the laughs from the audience come from these expected reactions. And it's just, it's so good.
Well, I think so too, good. That's kind of what makes, in my opinion, a comedy, a sitcom truly successful, is the healthy balance of in jokes and jokes that are just, or things that are just funny in general. And so this show, if you belong, and then that song starts playing, we belong. If you belong, then you get to have that extra. I mean, it is essentially what this intro is. The cold open, you're part of the club.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you're part of the gang. That's exactly it. You articulated that very well. Like, it, you feel like you're one of the people in the office watching this ridiculous screen and waiting for the DVD thing to bump into the corner and celebrate with everybody. It's the camaraderie of it. And I feel like season four is really bringing that camaraderie to a peak.
Right after our cold open, Meredith is cementing herself as the character that she is.
I'm singling you out.
Why, Micah? Why is she singling out Jim? Why is she being such a weirdo?
Being a creepy creep. She's being an absolute creepy creeper. And I mean, come on. It's the hike of the dress, or outfit, the way that she sort of thrusts her pelvis forward.
Oh, I hate that.
Those words. I don't want to ever say those words together, Meredith. Why have you done this to me?
She made you do it.
Me do this, Meredith, and I feel dirty now. I have to go wash out my mouth. But Jim, his reaction to the way, what he has to do, which, by the way, signing his name not as Jim Halpert, but as John Krasinski, I did a rewind about three times because I'm like, well.
Did you enhance? Did you press enhance?
Yeah, zoom and enhance. Yeah. Because the start of an H could kind of look like a K, but I'm like, the rest of that does not look like Halpert. It looks like Krasinski. And I found that funny. And I don't know. I'm really curious about that moment. If it was an accident and they rolled with it, if it was on purpose and they thought it was funny, if it was, you know, there's so many thoughts that I have about that moment.
I bet they filmed it and they didn't even notice. I think it was probably just second nature. Oh, I'm signing a cast. So he signs it, right? He's an actor. He signs things.
It would be really funny to have John Krasinski sign your cast. Please not your pelvic cast. But my God, would it be funny if you, I'm sure someone has done that. Like, can you sign my cast? And then he signed it in real life as Jim Halpert, because that's, it's all full circle.
Micah, if you ever get a cast, I will sign it.
Thank John you. Krasinski. Much appreciated. But this is a good moment, I think, for, like I said, Jim's reaction, the dead eye stare away after he signs it, and that like quiet, way too long moment of lingering the camera on him, of just like, what have I done and what is she going to do with that? That signature is all so perfect. It's another good moment. And we all just kind of feel for Jim in that moment.
I really want to highlight how well they set up the beginning of the plot of this episode. And it's basically Dwight versus Ryan's website in terms of how much paper can they sell. And it really is perfectly done, because it takes Dwight's competitiveness, especially how he's hypersensitive now about what happened with him and Angela, and it pits him so well against the computer, the way Michael reads that memo from Ryan.
The company is projecting record high sales, and that by 6 o'clock, the website will be the new best salesman in the company. Wow. Watch out, Dwight.
That's ridiculous. I'm not going to be beaten by a website.
Actually, it sounds like you are.
It feels like such a normal thing for Dwight to do. It doesn't feel contrived.
No, not at all. And I mean, we've seen him now several times think that the way to win back Angela and to impress her is by competition and by showing showing what he's capable of. And what I find fascinating about that, that is so his character, is how much he relates the human experience to the animal experience and like the animal kingdom. So like not smiling because in primates it shows fear and things like that. This is one of those moments. It's like you have those birds who build beautiful nests for their mates, and you have the cardinal bird that's the male is in a bright red color because he's trying to, you know, show off for his mate, etc. And he thinks that the way to win back the heart of the woman that he's lost is by being the best like no one ever was. And to catch all that paper is his little test, and to sell it is his cause.
Reference acknowledged.
Thank you.
Okay.
She's like, "And we'll stop there, Micah, please." so that is, it's right. It doesn't feel contrived to me because it's exactly who he is and what he does and the way that he thinks he's supposed to go about kind of what I feel is essentially reclaiming this person that he lost, and seeing him sort of fly in the face of what Angela is actually communicating to him, like her saying, I don't care what you're doing.
You believe a computer can beat me?
I don't care, but yes.
Well, I will prove you wrong.
I don't care, and you won't.
You'll see.
I won't be watching, and I won't.
And that back and forth is really, he's just so stubborn, and that kind of like bullheadishness is what got him into this situation in the first place, because he didn't listen and understand and like have an ounce of what should have been there, like empathy for his partner, is why he, as Pam puts it, mercy killed Angela's cat and ended up ruining their relationship.
His scruffy appearance is so sad. I don't know a better way to say it. It's just, just like you were saying in the last episode, the work that they see, you see him deteriorating physically as well as mentally. And I like that they added that in, that he kind of stops caring and it's really affecting him as a person. And where before we saw him as being, you know, a little bit tough exterior, we did see some things affect him, but now this is even more. And this is also a big Angela episode. Mm. Michael has a lot of nicknames for Angela in this episode. It's way more than normal. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
He calls her Pipsqueak.
What's that, Pipsqueak?
Booster Seat.
Wow, easy Booster Seat. Nobody cares about this party anyway.
Something else. There's like a couple of them.
If you are not this tall, you may not ride the roller coaster.
Nope. It's going to be nothing like the party you've been planning. This is going to be good.
Okay.
No, seriously, is there anyone else who could do it better? Because we don't have a lot of time.
But he's always throwing a quick insult her way almost every single time he interacts with her throughout this entire episode, which I felt was a little uncharacteristic. But he does it to Pam sometimes, but only almost like for the camera. But now it seems like he's so on edge about this party, and it felt a little odd.
I wonder if it was a way to kind of show how he's taking every opportunity to kind of punch down, because he feels like this person who he thinks is smaller and less important to him, Ryan, is upstaging him. And so he's sort of claiming his own throne and being not very nice to people who he has power over. But I don't know. That just kind of goes rather far for me. That's the only excuse that I could think of. Cause you're right that yes, he does do nicknames and stuff, but usually for Pam, it's just like plays on her name, Pamela Ding Dong, and not some mean thing, but he just keeps remarking on Angela's size and sort of belittling her both literally and figuratively.
I guess he does it to Phyllis too here and there, but yeah, this time true. It just felt a little bit extra aggressive. And Angela's not having a good day,
no.
Is she? I can understand she's snapping at everybody. Everything's kind of like a little extra raw. And I do like how Phyllis reacts too.
Angela is worse than usual lately, and we have a party to throw. So I Googled how to deal with difficult people, and I got all of this. So we're going to try out some new things today.
Oh, it's so good. I love Phyllis's confessionals. I love that she's kind of taking it into her own hands. My favorite part is when she shows up with all the sticky notes on her fingers. And she's like, I can't do all of this.
You can pick one of these things. It's unreasonable for you to ask me to do all of this. It should take you no time at all if you put the care into it that you normally do.
And she just crumples them up and throws them in her face like she has had enough.
Ow! That seemed to shut her up.
I was thinking about back in the beginning episodes when we saw the introduction essentially to the party planning committee and how meek and reserved and just doormat-like yes. Phyllis is being every time Angela would be Angela. And now we're seeing Phyllis having more of a backbone about it. She is standing up for herself. She's trying different methods to deal with her. And I like that. And also Phyllis's hair has gotten way better. I'm all into the hair. Like, I'm very into whose hair is getting better. But yeah, Phyllis is looking very nice these days.
Tiff, I want to understand what you're saying, but it's difficult for me when you use that
tone.
Oh
my gosh. It just,
these are spoons. Spoons have rounded tops and are used to scoop things. What we need are forks, which have prongs or tiny spears on top. I hate that moment so much. I want to stick a fork in her foot.
Yes, it grates on my nerves too.
Oh boy. But I like that competition-y feel that's going back and forth. And that, like, I don't know, D plot is kind of fun to, when you've got a big episode, it's fun to see these extra subplots playing out and to get to kind of check back mm-hmm. in on them throughout the episode is pleasing. And especially knowing who Angela is in real life and the actual, like, personality that she has. That's one of the things that, if it's your first time watching the show, I would love it if you went to Instagram or YouTube. Instagram is probably your best bet. Just look up Angela Kinsey or go to YouTube and look up Angela Kinsey and just either watch some interviews on YouTube or on Instagram. Just, like, check out her page and watch some videos, because Angela Martin and Angela Kinsey are night and day different. And her and Jenna Fischer are best friends in real life and have been since this show. And so having her call Pam the office mattress and what was it, the last episode, I think, it's not what, you know, you would want to do, but she does such a great job of playing this grating, mean-spirited character. And I think that, and like, toned down character, overall sort of monotone-esque. And I love that. I think that Angela Kinsey deserves all the applause for playing Angela Martin in The Office.
Yeah, there's a lot of times where I find out facts like that about actors, and then I rewatch a show or a movie, and I start noticing stuff. Like, I pick up things, and I'm like, oh, this kind of ruined it for me. But knowing all of that and rewatching The Office as many times as I have not picked up on that at all. I think that the acting is done so well that it just doesn't even show. Like, there's no indication that they're friends. It's so well done. I want to talk about the big prank that goes on. So Dwight and Angela are going through this whole public display. It's very public, but not many people know about it. But Pam and Jim do. Jim is getting increasingly annoyed by Dwight and the way he is acting with trying to outsell the computer.
Machines.
So he enlists Pam to help him prank Dwight. And I like that Pam has a moment mm-hmm. of sympathy for Dwight.
He's gone through a breakup.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. But he's also being super annoying, and I'm not a perfect person.
And then he does something extra annoying, and she's like, okay, I'm in. And they do a pretty simple prank. They just kind of, they're texting. Texting? No,
chatting.
Not texting. Chatting, yeah, back in the day, like AOL chat style, to Dwight as if they were this supercomputer that just became sentient. And do you know what the screen name is?
Oh, golly, I should. I don't remember it, but I should know it. What is it?
It's Dunmif/SYS.
Oh, Dunmif Sys.
Dunder Mifflin Systems. It's pretty simple. It seems like something that Dwight shouldn't believe, but they do it really well.
Yeah.
And we could see Pam's typing skills firsthand, as she's bragged about previously.
And I like how he doesn't just immediately fall for it. He does that. He kind of, you know, thinks that it might be Jim doing it and kind of runs that test. And so it's nice that we aren't just immediately given over to believe that he would be fooled by it until, you know, until they do a good job of fooling him. And it is a mostly innocent element that they're adding to the experience, because at the end of the day, it kind of encourages and invigorates Dwight in a way where I think that maybe if he didn't know that he was facing off against this computer that's kind of, you know, poking at him whenever he isn't doing as well, or the computer is learning more, then maybe he wouldn't have felt as much that he needed to sell as much as he did. And so I quite like that they figured out a way to prank Dwight without necessarily just
being cruel.
Yeah, being cruel and completely throwing him off his game. Yeah.
And I do like how that closes out when he does outsell the computer and the victory, and Angela doesn't give him that satisfaction or the reward with what Dwight was looking for. But at the end, Pam has this sympathetic moment for Dwight, and she tosses him the bone, right? And she says, you know, you've outsmarted me, or you outsold me, or whatever she types into the computer. And I really appreciate that warmth. That,
yes.
Yeah. It shows that they can still have this rivalry where they're pranking each other, but there is care there. They do care for each other as friends.
Yes, they are friends. And I love that about them. I love their ongoing relationship, that story there, and how it's grown over time is really nice. It's really nice, y'all.
So Michael, while all of this is going on, is getting ready to go to the super awesome party in New York that he thinks he is invited to. And there's so many great little things leading up to this. And we get that really good payoff of when he's in the car with Jim and he's showing off that he has this Green Eggs and Ham book, which he's going to be giving to Ryan instead of, oh, the places you'll go, which is such like a cliche book that people give each other when they succeed in things. And I like the reveal, how it slowly happens that you realize that Michael is invited to a chat room party and not an actual physical party. And Jim just asks a question and then he turns on his blinker and he starts turning around. He doesn't even say anything. He just starts turning the car around.
You're going to let me know when we're close, right?
Yes. All actually, right. I will tell you right now. It's a club called Chat Room, and there's a password to get in, which is actually password. So,
okay.
What are you doing?
That is an invitation to an online party.
No. Yeah. I'm sure that's not.
Are there three W's at the beginning of the address?
Yes.
Yep.
That is my favorite part too, because it's just so, I don't know, it's kind of how I would feel in that moment, where I could either freak out or I could just keep in mind that my boss is kind of a dummy and there's no point in getting upset about this, and we're turning around.
Yep.
Doesn't it just piss you off sometimes that little twerp got the promotion over us?
Oh, actually, yeah, I withdrew from consideration.
Yeah, I withdrew too.
I don't know. Ryan is doing all the wrong things that you do when you're or like all he's doing is just spending the company's money on stupid stuff. And I think that that's sort of what Ryan's whole deal is. It's like, look at all this flashy peacocking stuff so you can't see how utterly inept I actually am. And that goes as far as him going into someone else's office to do his talking head interviews instead of doing it in his own office. And that's one of my favorite little gags.
And I don't want us to get lost in the weeds or into a beauty contest.
I told you, I don't want you doing these things in here. You can use your own office or do it in the hall.
Because it does. It's exactly what Ryan is about. He's about the illusion of success, and he's trying all of this stuff, and it seems like what he should be doing. You know, he's kind of like following a script of stuff he's seen done before. And it's just, it's not innovative. It's just repeating a pattern.
Convergence, viral marketing. We're going guerrilla. We're taking it to the streets while keeping an eye on the street, Wall Street. I don't want to reinvent the wheel here. In other words, it is what it is.
But Michael returns from his brief trip to the party in very typical Michael fashion, where his ego now has a giant hole in it and he can't handle admitting the social rejection. So when he gets back to the office, he basically uses the just kidding defense for coming back.
Same defense for the last time he had to come back to the office.
Yep. Just kidding. I'm back. I am back.
Oh, who thought that I was going to be gone? You thought I was going to be gone? No.
And every time he does this, it's just like in real life when other people do it, it's like we all know that the I'm kidding is covering up real feelings. You know, it's covering up real mistakes and it's not fooling anybody. It never does, but it is a way for Michael to save face. And because it's especially raw with Michael because he needs all that acceptance.
His is to a point where he pretty much will do anything he can to rewrite the story. And that, like I said, I've talked about this before. It's kind of scary. The level to which he'll go to rewrite the script so that he doesn't have to. He's just like Michael. If there was one word that I could use to I'm not going to say that, because one word used to describe Michael, I would have to think a lot more about that. But one of like five words I would use to describe Michael is denial. This dude is always in denial about so many different things, and it sort of pushes his personality forward because he was in denial about him being in a bad relationship with Jan, and so he stayed in that for longer than he should. And then he's in denial about his feelings actually being true about how he feels with Jan, and her advice was bigger, and so he got back with her. And he's in denial now about sort of not being important enough to go to the corporate party. And so he's so in denial and so much doesn't want to confront that, that he comes back to the office and pretends like he was always going to be there and that there has to be this huge launch party now. And that like fuels his antics and pushes him forward. And we have to believe that the camera adds to that, that if this office existed in a place and we could hit like play on the Sims button essentially and the office played out, there wouldn't be as many of these awesome, hilarious moments, because that denial is so much more powerful when he has to like carry that over into the energy he puts into convincing everyone who's going to watch this documentary that he's this super cool dude who's in charge of everything.
The confessional that happens right after his return, though, I think shows some growth.
It was a pretty disappointing day. It was kind of a slap in the face to realize that I wasn't as important as I thought I was to a certain young executive who I'd cared about. But, you know, I'm not going to cry over it. I did that in the car on the way home.
He has some self-reflection in that one, and he realizes that he was hurt by Ryan. And I like that. I like that we see him acknowledging his own feelings, I think maybe for the first time, like he's really looking at himself. He then passes it off of like he's just going to throw this big awesome party. So it's not a completely perfect self-reflection, but it is improvement. And I have to say, Ryan is kind of a jerk for not inviting all of the branch managers. They should have been there. Like that seems actually really silly to have them just wave on a webcam. Like, why aren't they there if it's this big corporate party? Who else is there?
Who's actually there? Did you invite your friends?
How like, big is this company? There? Who's at this party?
Six people?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it like full of trying to have like these A-list celebrities?
It's one of those non-WWDC Apple events where everybody that's in the audience is some celebrity.
Yeah. It's like a ruse party. It's meant to look all like this giant thing, and then it's actually not, which is funny because that's basically what Michael is trying to recreate in the office. He's trying to create his own ruse party, and that causes some interesting antics in part two.
Yeah, because now we are going to put on a party.
The list is so great.
Beer, light beer, streamers, orchids, better lighting, something mm-hmm. made of ice.
Those are just things. This is how I want it to feel.
Pizza, pizza with mushrooms, pizza without mushrooms, white pizza, steak.
I would like this party to be sexier, cooler, more important.
Chocolates, someone famous, cool yes. music. Confetti,
go-go
dancers.
I want it.
And poor Angela. Like we've said before, she's going through a lot. And now, once again, she has Michael messing up what could have been an A-OK party. And, you know, thank God there's no shoe money this time, or sock money, as Angela is wont to call it. But it's still him coming in and sort of ruining things for everyone, including her. And we have, as we started this episode with, Alfredo's Pizza Cafe and Pizza by Alfredo. And I love that Oscar is sort of the touchstone, is the person that they go to, like, can you please explain this to him? Because none of us can. You are the only person who can get through to him. Like, please tell him what's going on.
Oscar, talk to him.
Michael, there's a very big difference between these two pizza places, both in quality of ingredients and in overall taste. Which one did you order from? Pizza by Alfredo.
And I quite love that so much. And so Oscar's like, listen, here are all the details. This pizza is very important to us. Tell us what's going on.
And every place has something like this, where there are two rival things for something, and there's one that's clearly better, and there are certain people that care a lot about that, and it matters big time which one you pick, because one is clearly better than the other. And I think that that's what makes this so endearing, is that everyone's had this situation. Everyone's been in a group of friends where someone comes in and orders the wrong thing, and everyone's like, no, how could you?
All right, you know what? Okay, what is better? A medium amount of good pizza, or all you can eat a pretty good pizza?
A medium amount of good pizza.
And then my favorite Kevin quote of all time.
It's like eating a hot circle of garbage.
It's perfect. And I have used that for eating terrible pizza.
Oh, have before. You really? Oh, I love that. I love that.
It's so good. I've definitely thrown it out there and people have not known what I was talking about. And I'm okay with that because I know in my heart that it is hilarious.
You're like, I'm funny, darn it.
I am.
That's great.
But we get a hostage situation with the delivery boy, thanks to some coupon discrepancies.
Once again, I cannot understate how incredibly clever the writers, producers tend to be with this show in doubling up on events that are going on, that they have like multiple layers. They're like ogres, which are like onions, which have multiple layers. These different themes that run throughout the episode have so many different layers to them. And so we saw with Michael and Dwight going to be murdered by a lake, and they're handing out gift baskets. And the whole time they're talking about reclaiming old clients, and Dwight the whole time is relating that to winning back Angela. And this time we have this delivery driver, this young guy who isn't listening to Michael and doesn't respect Michael, and who Michael feels like is trying to claim some authority over him, as the stand-in for Ryan at corporate, and Michael taking out all of his frustrations on this character. And I found it fascinating. Typically, we will stay up to date with trivia and things like that by checking out theoffice.fandom.com, which is also called Dunderpedia. And the editors of this page listed that whole idea in the trivia section, where it's like Michael takes his frustrations on Ryan out on the pizza delivery boy, saying, you don't even know anything about sales. And I don't, like, to me, this is not a cute little trivia moment. This is the whole point of the episode. This is the theme. And this is Michael, we've seen Dwight do this, and now it's Michael finding a way to exercise his frustration, both EXE and EXO, exercise his frustration on this character, because he cannot do it to Ryan himself.
I'm an adult. I don't have to think or do anything. You're a kid. You're a little snot-nosed punk kid who thinks he's better than everybody else because he's some hot shot. And you don't know anything about sales.
And I love that. That is chef's kiss once again. And it can't be understated how important that is, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, but at the same time that we have this kind of like serious psychoanalytic idea of what is going on here, like we all can see it unfolding before our eyes, we do have this great level of comedy where we have the apathy of this kid just juxtaposed with Dwight, who's caring so much and like yelling in his face, and like it's really, really good, the two of them paired together. And especially that little confessional about him stealing weed from his farm, and it's very, very good.
I've seen this kid before. He's one of the kids that sneaks onto my farm and steals my hemp.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's that farmer that grows really crappy weed.
We also have this great moment in Michael's office where Jim is adjusting Michael's vocabulary as he calls up the pizza place and has his hostage negotiation phone call. And Jim keeps putting the correct terminology into it just under his breath as he's making this phone call. I think that that scene is really, really well played.
You know what, Jim? The world would be a better place if people were held accountable for their actions.
Yes, but not by kidnapping them.
I'm not kidnapping him. I'm keeping him until I get what I want.
As a hostage.
I think you're overthinking it.
I think you're underthinking it.
And again, it's that subtlety that we can get from these characters now. We don't need much more than that in order to convey exactly what's going on. Jim is the voice of reason here, and Michael is floundering at like what he wants, and the whole office is just like, oh no, we're all accomplices in this hostage situation, and this is just bad. And I like how that all plays out for the rest of the episode until Michael kind of comes to this realization that, oh my gosh, I actually do have a hostage. What have I done? I've made a horrible mistake.
He tries to be smooth about undoing it, which I find, you know, kind of admirable and funny.
He treats him kind of like an animal that got stuck in the house or something. It's like, just open the door and it'll find its way out. Like,
don't make any sudden movements. If we need to get a broom,
just pay him his money and then stand back and just let him do his thing. I also want to say that the kid who is the pizza delivery kid is the kid from Glee, yes, who is in the wheelchair. And that is, it comes up later where Michael expresses that that is his favorite Glee character.
Kevin McHale is his name.
If anyone out there is listening, I'm being held here against my will. I'm a minor.
The episode kind of comes to a close once the hostage has been released and the office decides to order the good pizza and just kind of abandon the large pile of bad pizza that they have. And Micah, we get a nice Jim and Pam moment.
I was waiting. I knew it was going to happen.
Oh, they're just going to keep on coming after this. It is. It's just every single time. But it wasn't a Jim and Pam heavy episode. That's it true. Was like a little pranky together. And then now we get this. And it's not a lot. It's not heavy. It's just the two of them on the roof again. And that's what I like here, is that this harkens back to when Jim made his grilled cheese sandwiches.
Yes.
And he brought them back up on the roof and they watched Dwight shoot off the fireworks. This is that again. They're sneaking off and they're up on the roof together and they're away from everybody. And instead of just talking like friends this time, they are revealing to each other when they first kind of fell for each other and the funny little moments that they had. And I love that honesty and that endearing part of it. And their romance together and their relationship is just built on something that feels so real. Mm-hmm. And the moments that they chose to highlight, or that, you know, that are written in, but it's still are so not grand.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. they're quirky and they are personal and it's real. And that's what makes me fall in love with it.
Do you remember what you said to me on my first day at work, just before you walked me over to my desk?
Yeah. Enjoy this moment, because you're never going to go back to this time before you met your deskmate, Dwight.
And that's what I knew.
You?
You came up to my desk and you said, this might sound weird, and there's no reason for me to know this, but that mixed berry yogurt you're about to eat has expired.
That was the moment that you knew you liked me?
Yep.
Wow. Can we make it a different moment?
Nope.
They just smile at each other. The way they look at each other now feels so deep and affectionate. It really has changed from the previous seasons. You know, before they would have those kind of like subtle looks to each other that you weren't noticing as much, but they were there. The camera would get them, but they weren't noticing each other. Now the looks that they have for each other are just for each other, and they're deeper and they're longer and they're more meaningful. Ah, I could just swim in this all day. It's just so good.
It's genuinely, I love that. I always love when things are, you know, when we harken back to things that have happened before. And so them returning to a really cute point in their relationship with the grilled cheese again is super touching. And yeah, so this movement moans me, but it's this moment moves me quite a bit. And I also like too that it's kind of them sneaking away to not have to deal with the office drama that's going on, which is sort of what they did before. And it's their relationship kind of serves as a bubble that protects them from too much of the, like, at least they can count on each other is kind of how it feels, that even if things are going wrong in the office, they always have each other. And that's super sweet.
Oh, it's so good. I'm sorry. I'm just such a romantic. I'm just like, I love this part.
So more okay, romance I'm done. Is.
Oh no.
Andy shooting his shot.
Stop saying shooting his shot. I hate it.
Andy shooting his shot with, listen, that is the term of the day, Tiff Arment. I am plugged in. No. That's what the kids are saying. And he is shooting his shot with Angela. And he uses his, it is Andy romantic.
Andemantic?
Andemantic. It is Andemantic. which almost sounds like anti-mantic, because for me it is super not romantic. But he's trying to be cute and sweet, and we see Angela actually respond to this gesture of her being serenaded over speakerphone, which sounds terrible, but I think she's happy to have some attention that's not Dwight.
I think she's happy to have attention in front of Dwight.
Ooh. So you feel like this is sort of more dark-hearted.
I feel, yes.
Okay.
I maybe not completely, but I think she gets satisfaction at kind of getting back at Dwight at this point.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think they are both way too raw and angry. Well, she's angry. He's grieving. She is feeling a little bit of satisfaction in hurting him because he hurt her so badly.
And he was so unapologetic at first. And it took him a while to sort of switch from being unapologetic to actually realizing that he had hurt her. So yeah, I actually do get that. I think if someone killed my animal, they probably wouldn't show up to work ever again. But for her, at least all she's doing is just getting, kind of using Andy. See, this is wild now, Tiff. This has opened up a whole new thing, because I thought, I had this in my mind that Andy and Angela, like Angela actually started to have feelings for Andy, and that there was a period where they actually did like each other. And then Angela just sort of got over and dealt with the frustrations that she had with Dwight. But now I think from the get-go, all the way through to what we're going to see over the course of these episodes coming up, it all was just a big sham to get back at Dwight until that changes the way that it does. And that means, like, from the start, it was all a lie. And that's wild. Whoa.
So we get that one little part in the middle where we see Angela asking Pam to set her up in front of Dwight.
Hey, do you have any men that you can fix me up with? I would like to have a relationship with a man.
I'll get back to you.
Let me know.
And that also harkens back to exactly what Pam did in front of Jim when she asked Ryan to set her up. It's kind of like a whole look at how I'm moving on, or just one of those animalistic displays of you have all these emotions and you are trying to tell someone something and you do it in a really
crummy way,
poor, hurtful way. And I can't help but say, like, so Andy's pursuit of Angela is kind of the worst.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
She's obviously not interested at first. And that's why I really think that, like we just said, that smirk that she has is more of a devilish thing than
maybe on the face of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she probably does eventually like the attention, but we will see how this progresses with her and Andy as the season goes on.
I'm keeping all of this in mind because I think that you've broken it wide open. I think that you're dead on about this, that this is not that from the start of their relationship, it was never her actually having feelings for him. It was more about hurting Dwight. And then she just kind of lets it keep going. And we like that just makes so much sense with we'll revisit this because that makes so much sense. Yes. With stuff that happens in the way that she reacts to those things. And so, yeah, I really like that look at things for sure.
We still have a tiny bit of the episode left. It is when Michael decides that he wants to go get his New York style sushi.
It's authentic, Tiff.
And him and Dwight, they drive to New York. And I like that they're kind of like picking up the leftovers at the party.
And they're like cool. They're cool guys. Well, Michael's a cool guy.
Well, Michael gets a little bit of taste of satisfaction as one of the people who were at the party was like, that was really funny how you embarrassed Ryan. And I think that was good for Michael's ego. And when we saw them, we didn't mention this, but when we saw them interacting at the webcam, the thing that Michael says, it was pretty poignant. I was actually kind of proud of Michael. He stood up for himself, and it probably wasn't the most appropriate venue for work, but Ryan so deserved it.
Ryan deserved it. And it's clear that he's kind of considered a bit of a twerp at work at corporate. And I could understand why, because he's probably, he puts too much emphasis on the unimportant things. And so if he's, you know, worried about wearing the best suit and going out every night and this and that and the other, then he's probably not doing a very good job at his actual job. And so I would imagine that people don't take him seriously at corporate. And now I'm kind of thinking, if you are worried that people aren't going to take you serious, so people aren't taking you seriously where you work, but you are the boss of all of the regional managers that work at all of the different places, you would not want to have those people come to a corporate hangout and then everybody at corporate starts bad mouthing you and dogging on you. And then suddenly all of the regional managers lose respect for you because every one of Ryan's coworkers is saying Ryan is like sniveling and dork. So of course you would have them call in via satellite instead of actually having them there to have the opportunity to hear what a poor job you're doing. And so he maintains that respect by sort of being that emperor who only shows his face every, you know what I mean? Like he's keeping his subjects away and out in their feudal lands. And they can only, as we've seen here, like call in via webcam. They don't get to come to the actual castle and then hear all of the other people at the castle say, here's why Ryan sucks. Like no one here respects him. No one here thinks that he's some hotshot like he thinks he is. And that would like break down the whole facade that Ryan has built up. So I almost wonder, I mean, again, this is like super meta and getting into it, but I kind of like that story for the reason why he's kind of keeping everybody away. And so to have at the end, Michael come to that place and then have Ryan's actual colleagues and his coworkers that are probably on the same level as him be like, oh, that was so great how you showed up Ryan like that. That's a little hint at like, if they were actually there, they would have heard more of that, I think.
Well, shall we give out our Dundee now that we've come to the end of the episode?
Doggone shall. Do you want to hand this one out? You want me to? It's up to you.
No, I love when you do the Dundees.
Okay, well, that's very sweet.
I do. I feel like you're the Dundee guy.
Well, I am happy to dund the Dundee. This week's Dundee, which we're calling the Prettiest Art of All the Art Award, goes to our special pal over on Twitter, Side of Serotonin. That's at Side of Serotonin, for coming across the most zippity zoppity color pencils we have ever seen. So Side of Serotonin tweeted at Tall_Beats and said, I thought Tiff might appreciate these awesome office themed colored pencils.
She does.
I immediately showed Tiff, hey, here's this tweet. You have got to check out these colored pencils. Tiff, I think you bought like 3 packs, right?
I might have bought 3 packs. Yeah.
Did you see whenever you go to add them to your cart, there's also an office coloring book.
I did see that, but I, for some reason, I was doing it on my phone and it wouldn't through, but that's okay. It's okay. I have 3 packs and...
You have 3 packs.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all 3. Maybe I'll give them away as fabulous prizes and keep one for
myself.
There you
go. You could send one my way. I would I'd be happy.
Consider it done, co-host.
Oh, I'm going to cry.
Oh, don't cry.
There's Scrantan Strangler, The Electric City, Blues Cruise, Broccoli Rob, That's What She Read. Oh my God, I love that one, that pun. D. White Christmas, Pam Pink, Diversity Gray, Golden Face, Kevin's Famous Chili, and Andy Bernard, so it's like a burnt orange, and Threat Level Midnight, which is black.
Perfect.
It's 12 colored pencils. They come in this really nice box that can be displayed, and they say office colors on the front of them. Just like a clever thing. Last I checked, they were out of stock. Like I said, Tiff bought 3, and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to go get those. And I was going to go get some, but then they had sold out. And also, I'm moving right now. And so it's like, oh boy, am I throwing extra money towards some colored pencils right now?
Well, if you're a fan of any other shows, they have some Friends ones and Parks and Recreation. Well, yeah. There's like so many fun ones. I love
this. Definitely check out popcolors.com. But our thanks to Side of Serotonin for making us aware of those. And that is why you're getting the prettiest art of all the art award. So come on up here and get your Dundee.
Congratulations. And everyone, be sure to go over and follow us at tall_beats on Twitter and subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable to get fun goodies at the end of the year or access to our awesome trivia episode, which hopefully on the previous episode, you got to hear our little preview clip of that. And maybe it gave you a little taste of how awesome it was and you should definitely go become a member. Make sure to go rate, star, subscribe, and like us over on Apple Podcasts because we love attention like Michael Scott and validation, and we need your love. And that's just, please just go over. Don't walk, run. And next week we'll be here talking about the episode Money.
I declare bankruptcy.
Take a chance.